Well, good morning to you. It is Monday. We are joined by Jack Devnarain and by everybody in the comments section, and shit is happening there. Wow. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of noise here. I see Dirk Kutsia wants to know, is the doc not on today? So I asked James during the break because we didn't have Dr. Hanan on this morning. We always have a psychologist on a Monday morning.
Oh, good one.
Don't you think that's a good idea,
Great
Jack?
Great idea.
You think we need it?
I think you need it.
Probably more than most. Yeah. So that's a thing that we meant to do on a Monday. Apparently there was a problem with James didn't figure out how to get Dr. Hanan on. I'm going to blame you, James. You and Flex, both of you. You equally share that responsibility this morning. We were talking about what Jack does. Now it's pretty much your full-time job.
It feels right? like it, yeah.
You're representing all of these actors. Are these bastards paying you, these actors?
No.
Oh, dude.
No, I'm
You're doing it for nothing.
This is, you know.
What kind of a sucker are you?
Free suicide. Career suicide is what it is.
No, well, it's also hard work. You have to be the interlocutor between them and, you know, the producers and the broadcasters. You are making it difficult for yourself, but
yeah,
there's you should be paid for this shit.
Yeah, in an ideal world, yes, because then I would be a unionist and then I would be paid by the union.
So start a union.
See, we're going back to the first hour now.
Oh. Okay, let's leave it. I do want to move on because there are all kinds of important things we've got to get to this morning. Not that what you're doing isn't, but this is, you know, this is Monday, so we got to catch up with all the stuff that happened over the weekend. This is kind of related. Sir Elton John has criticized the UK's government plan to allow AI companies to use artists' work without permission or payment.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're calling it criminal and a betrayal of creators. He warned it could rob young artists of their future and vowed to fight the move legally if necessary. Mm. The government rejected a House of Lords amendment demanding transparency from AI developers, prompting backlash from creatives who argue that policy favors tech giants over protecting artists' rights. So,
that's a big deal, yeah. We're going back to
Elton
that.
John's on your side.
Yeah.
That's good.
As he should be.
Yeah. I mean, he... You see, I also think it's like timing is everything, right?
Mm.
What do you think the best time to have been an actor was? The golden age of Hollywood, the 50s and 60s?
Yeah, no, I think later on. I think from the time we went into VHS, that period between the 80s and 90s, VHS to DVD, that would have been the time. That's when you were creating new copies based on new technology. Royalties then would have spiked.
Who is the most successful actor in the world now, do you think? And who's the best actor in the world, in your opinion?
I'm thinking probably successful Tom Cruise because he's producer actor.
And he's still doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's what, in his 60s now, and the guy is still doing Mission Impossible.
Absolutely.
I mean, what are we on? Mission Impossible 205.
Yeah, and he still runs a very mean sprint.
Yeah.
Which is incredible, fantastic, well done to him.
He's in great shape. He still looks good.
Yeah.
And the guy is clearly making tons of money.
Yeah.
And he can command big box office numbers.
Do you remember that breakdown that he had? He was shooting something and it was during COVID.
Was it not when he jumped on Oprah's sofa and said how much he loved Katie, what's his name?
No.
Because that was a breakdown in my opinion.
That was, yeah. He should have apologized to the world.
I thought he was so mentally fragile at that point because he was trying so hard to convince all of us that he was happily married and that he was thrilled that, you know. And Nicole Kidman's like standing just off stage going, huh? What are you, insane?
Yeah, he just was trying too hard, it seemed.
Look, he's clearly a crackpot. I mean, he's very big into the Scientology stuff.
Yeah.
He you can see there's a like a ferocity in the way that he confronts his career.
Mm.
And he does that very, very professionally and very well. But it's almost like he's single-minded to the degree that his whole life is just these movie projects.
Yeah.
I don't think he does anything else. He certainly hasn't got like successful relationships to point to or...
Well, not many have.
No, I mean, it's hard to be the best at what you do. That's why I asked, who do you think the best is?
Yeah.
Who do you think the greatest actor is, though? Like, I've watched movies and thought, wow, that it could be a, you know, actor or actress, but who do you think is...
Yeah, look...
Who are your favorites?
It's somebody like Benedict Cumberbatch, for me,
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You know, you can see the depth of classical training there, all the way into recreating performances and characters for the new age of how we make film and TV now.
Mm.
And there are others. Our mistake, though, is not to be trapped into the British or the Hollywood traditions of what is fine acting. We've got to look beyond that into the continent, into Asia, into India, and you discover golden talent there that's just breathtaking in its integrity. And you think, we need to learn from that. And it's not just about, you know, the Tom Cruises of the world.
Yeah, it's just, again, like Western, you know, American culture, let's not call it Western, American culture has suffused and expanded. This is their real power. It's not just the dollar.
Right, yeah.
And you asked about the weaponization of podcasts earlier, but the weaponization of culture is probably a much more interesting discussion. And the world, even in places like China, which has done its best to not only ignore and avoid American culture, especially recently, but even they can't help it.
Well,
they can't help it. I mean, you look at how American products, American movies, American music.
You had Dennis Rodman everywhere. Going to visit North Korea.
Yeah. North Korea, which is sealed off from the world.
Yes.
They don't even know America. They couldn't point to it on a map in North Korea.
Exactly. And you had that. I mean, Rodman, for whatever he is a cultural icon.
It's like Steven Seagal. He's in Russia, right? He's doing the same thing that Rodman did in North Korea.
Yeah.
Of course, North Korea and Russia are very different countries, and the one is not hermetically sealed off from the world. But there was a video of Steven Seagal just like doing ordinary shit in Moscow. That's where he lives now.
Oh, does he now?
Yeah, he's become like big mates with Putin, and he's totally, some people would say, sold out to Russia.
Mm.
Others would say that he's just a big fan of Russian culture. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an interesting parallel between him and Dennis Rodman. And Dennis Rodman's big mates with old Kim Jong-un, right?
Yeah.
What a world. So do you listen to podcasts? Because you brought up, like, have podcasts been weaponized? I'm interested in where that goes.
Man, I realized that there were people who were trying to score points about, you know, putting out their point of view about their views on the industry. And I thought it was an interesting choice that people decide to go on a certain podcast in order to score those points.
Sure.
So I was wondering, why did you choose that podcast? And, you know, have you now satisfied your need to put out your point of view because you had that hour to sit and talk to somebody and you manipulated the agenda so that you were speaking about the thing that you needed to say? And then the response to that made me think, okay, so...
Was this a particular person you're talking about?
Yeah. There was a producer who failed to pay performers, technical crew, and service providers, and then went on to
lie
about it.
And they tried to, like, launder their name.
Yeah. And they started to accuse people like me of a smear campaign.
Oh.
And then they go on to a podcast.
So who is this? Because they mentioned you, so you can mention who they are.
Yeah. I don't feel like I need
to
mention
you. Screw them, man. If they try to smear you, you can hit right back.
No, of course I could. But see, that's the thing, is that I don't feel the need to do that because...
You think it's trashy?
Yeah, and I think it's poor form because I presented facts.
Okay.
And I actually had...
Okay, so people go on podcasts. All right, so let's turn away from this particular example because this sounds a little internecine and in the acting world for me to understand. I mean, I'm not...
Yeah.
Diminishing its
severity. No, exactly. And if I wanted to, I would have said, hey, Gareth, listen, I want to talk about this guy.
Okay.
And I don't want to.
Podcasts can be used, especially where, James and Flex, you'll listen to this. If you have producers who are easily manipulated.
Mm.
never you guys. Then you are going to have people who are trying to sell something or trying to get a message across, who are trying to propagandize on behalf of whatever it is they're trying to do. They will get on and they'll be able to do their thing.
Yeah.
I've always tried to sniff those people out. If they really want to just do a hard sales message, it's hardly ever a yes. But if they are prepared to pay for it and my audience will bear it,
yeah,
and they know that we've also got to keep the lights on, right?
Sure.
So there's a kind of a delicate balance there.
Mm.
So if someone wants to sell lawnmowers and they are prepared to pay for editorial on this show or for a commercial or whatever it is, and the audience go, okay, well, you know what? We'll put up with that lawnmower commercial,
yeah,
because we know that's what makes the show possible.
Mm.
Otherwise, I'm not going to do this because I'm a Madonna sitting around waiting for royalties.
Yeah.
And there is a delicate balance between that and just being true and honest. And yeah, you know, when I invited you here, and I said at the beginning of the show, we weren't just going to talk about the acting thing, but that is such an important part of what you're doing at the moment. It's and you've become the lone voice in some ways. I don't feel that if you wanted to suddenly promote some agenda, that would last very long.
Yeah,
I think I can tell when someone's got an agenda.
Yeah, and when you're being manipulated or your show is being manipulated.
Maybe sometimes it's happened. I'm unaware of when it has. I try to be awake to these things because, you know, there are people who take advantage. Mm. But I think there are a lot of really dumb people in podcasting who just don't have any experience and will be taken advantage of, definitely.
Yeah.
Directly, and you'll be able to see it immediately.
And also because podcasting as a form of entertainment –
yeah,
has become so popular.
I mean, you know, you could always argue that if someone is like the publishers, let's say the publishers tell me there's this guy who's just written a book and he's got interesting ideas about this or that or the other, and it would be great to have him on. I know they're just trying to flog books.
Yeah.
And so does everybody who's listening. But if it creates the excuse for me to be able to have someone really amazing or interesting in the studio, cool, then it's great. Then we'll... That's the compromise we make.
Sure, then it works for your show.
But how about weaponized? If it's being used, then those people who have been weaponized should be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah.
Because they're allowing mudslinging, effectively.
Exactly.
And reputational damage to occur on their platform. And that's a dereliction of responsibility and duty on their part.
And do they have that as a podcaster?
There's no governing rule in podcasting. You know, I saw the government, in fact... Kumbutso Njaveni, the same minister who we were talking about earlier, she said the other day that podcasting needs to be regulated.
She said that.
Yeah, well, I think they're just throwing a line out there. They're trying to see who would be frightened and riled and ruffled by it.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you right now, I am less afraid of a minister in this country than I am of lizards in my river. I'll put various items of my anatomy on the block that these guys who can't even keep the lights on wouldn't be able to organize a piss up in a brewery before they'd be able to organize regulation in the podcasting business. Because if you try, let me just remind you, you have the whole internet that you have to then regulate. Because this stuff will pop up somewhere else. People will find it in some new location. I could change it to a YouTube show, then it's not just a podcast. We could do anything to make it happen because by the time you've drafted laws, we've already moved 10 iterations on.
Yeah.
So it's not going to happen. And podcasting isn't just an audio file like it used to be in the beginning. You know, it was like a downloadable audio file that you would listen to. Now it's video and the clips and the social media.
Live.
And so good luck taking on X, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google. You're going to be very, very busy. And for a minister who clearly has quite a lot to deal with at the moment, just be a little humble.
But what kind of mind comes up with a proposition so ridiculous as to even suggest that?
Well, it's the same people who want to regulate everything. These are the same people who told us that we couldn't wear open shoes during COVID.
Yeah.
People who told us we couldn't buy at hardware stores during COVID. I mean, you remember the stupid... They're small tyrants.
Woolies so roast they, chicken.
Yeah, they're the kind of people who want to create, I don't know, difficulty for everyone else. They want to enforce... And execute laws because they probably have very little control in their own life. That's the only explanation I can try to find.
Have you come across that attempt to regulate the ownership of firearms in security companies, which was a recent discussion?
Yeah. They were trying to remove pistols and yeah. and other weapons from security guards.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they've suddenly realized, it's occurred to them that there are more private security guards in South Africa by a huge proportion than there are army and police officers put together.
Yes.
I think yes. it's something like 2-1.
And you've got more security companies that are protecting state infrastructure.
Yeah.
Then the state can protect for itself.
Great move, guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is your own assets that can't be protected by the police.
Yeah.
And we have a very, very low ratio of policemen to people in this country.
Yes.
One policeman, I think it's 40,000 people in the country are served by each policeman. So we've got a tiny police force that can't possibly do.
Yeah.
Listen, a lot of them I feel very sorry for, because I think there are probably plenty of good cops who are doing the best they can.
Mm.
But they're also the useless cops who you see standing on the side of the road, eating a Tex bar, getting bigger and bigger in their uniform every fucking week. And they're not doing anything to do with law enforcement.
Yeah.
They're just trying to elicit bribes, getting involved in drug deals, doing all sorts of dodgy stuff. I hope they're the minority. I don't know for a fact.
Yeah. And well, at the time I left the police, I was very proud of the units that I had worked with, their
what
achievements,
rank did
their
you
convictions.
Get to there?
I was a constable.
Right.
And we had a fantastic conviction rate.
Which police station?
This was down in Durban.
Mm-hmm.
Central. And I hoped, because at the time that I was leaving, I could see even then that politics had crept in, a lack of willingness to discipline people who are now, who
accountability.
Accountability was a big thing. Yeah, there was a hunger to try and get higher up the rank structure. So there was serious unfettered ambition, and it went hand in hand with politics. So while that was playing out, people forgot to discipline guys in the force lower down who were getting things wrong.
You must have had some horrible experiences as a policeman, because that's not a fun job, and you get to see sometimes the really ugly underbelly of society.
Yeah,
you know,
it changes
you.
You
see a lot of violence. You see a lot of real deprivation.
Yeah. Yeah, you see things that change you, and you never forget them. And you've got to try and expand your worldview in order to try and understand what you're working with. One of the ways I describe it is to say that violence is a language. And there are people that you meet in this world who only speak
that language.
Yeah. And you can only speak to them in the same language, because it's the only language they understand.
I had such a debate with a friend of mine a few weekends ago, because he's one of these people who believes in that there is a possible utopia. You know, if we just all had the same amount of stuff, that we'd all be happy. And I said to him, but what you fail to realize is, and you've articulated it so well, that some people are psychopaths and sociopaths.
Yeah.
And that they only understand that language of violence and selfishness and so much worse.
Mm.
And that those people they're out there. And they can't be rehabilitated. They're not the sort of people who can, if I just get them a nice job or give them a house, they'll become fine.
Yeah, and if somebody can take me back to when I was 5 years old and I was treated like this by my father.
Yeah, we can't.
I wish we could help that.
There's no way to do it.
No.
It's interesting, too, that being a policeman in this country, I mean, when did you stop doing that?
2002.
Okay, so, we're not talking years and years. We're not talking, a generation ago. But there must have been people with real expertise. You were probably one of them. Some of the people who could really track down the bad guys.
Oh, yeah. Now, I was learning from those guys.
Yeah.
I imagined myself becoming one of them. And I realized that there is I probably could never be that even if I wanted to, because the most effective cops that I know and you know are the guys who fall on both sides of the line. These are the guys who know how to play with the law in order to effect justice. And there's a difference between law and justice.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's some things that happen in order to bring justice about, which we would not necessarily call legal.
Absolutely, yeah. That's what makes them effective as cops.
Yeah. And you're dealing with the rough edges here. You're not dealing with smooth things.
Yeah. Yeah. As Jack Nicholson said, you know, it's not the kind of thing you talk about at parties.
Yeah. We need walls, son.
Yeah.
And you need men standing on those walls. What you sleep by the grace of the cover I give you, or something like that.
And then you question the manner in which I provide it.
Yeah, that's right. What a great speech.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Jack Nicholson. Now, he was a great actor.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, so would you say that policing is harder than acting?
No, I need think of it this way. When I was in uniform, I had to go and attend a scene. And in this scene, I had to present myself with a certain attitude and tone of voice.
Sure.
And I had to make sure that by the time I left that scene, it was different. It had changed from the time I entered it. If you transpose that into the acting world, I'm in wardrobe. Mm. I go into the start of a scene, I say something, there's a dialogue, and then it changes by the time I leave, and the story has moved on.
Right.
So for me, it's always performance.
Why do you actors always love playing the villain?
There are fewer rules. Villains subscribe to fewer social constructs than good, decent people do.
Oh. Even the complex ones.
Yeah. The complex ones, even the good, decent, complex people are just like the cops that we spoke about. They understand the darkness within them.
All right, this is good. Jack Devnarain is with us, and we're talking about all kinds of stuff. I just want to quickly go to the comments here. There's lots of other people. 20 years is a lot, GC. He's closer to being a doorman than he was to the SAPS. You know, Dirk, that's very, very unkind. You also have to be violent at some point. That's Mapelo. I think he's talking about being a cop.
Yeah.
You have to be violent at some point.
Yeah,
nothing like a five-year stint as a policeman in the apartheid era to put the world and SA in perspective, says Durban Dope. So I'm assuming that you, Durban Dope, did that. I don't know. Is that what you're telling me? You can handle the truth, says Congo Chris.
Yes.
Villains often have strong motivations, which are very relatable.
Yeah.
I mean, they could be driven by those four things.
Exactly.
Which I was talking about earlier. Power, money, pleasure, fame.
And they're quite raw. The thing is with a villain is that you immediately identify what's driving him. So you know exactly what it is, which one of the four.
Yeah, I think that so many of these villains in movies today, though, it's so like low level. I mean, you know, Thanos just wants to make the world the universe less populated. I mean, what kind of motivation is that? Like, what is the universe full, too full?
Yeah. That's quite infantile.
That's a stupid motivation.
Yeah.
And all these guys are, I just want to kill Spider-Man. You're like, come on, dude. Is that, you got to have more than that.
Give me more than that.
I can understand if you were pursuing a woman. Let's say you were in love, the love of your life. You were trying to bring someone back from the dead, or you were trying to take over the galaxy. That I understand. Those are reasonable motivations. Just to kill Spider-Man? Do me a favor. Don't you think that these superhero movies now have just become so predictable?
Yeah, I think the Marvel Universe, all those things, I think they've tired themselves out.
Ugh.
Audiences have outgrown that sort of stuff now. And I think people are looking for something a little bit more intellectually engaging.
Yeah, they don't even try.
No.
In fact, they rehash the same story over and over again. You can almost start the movie and predict the end of it within 5 minutes.
Yeah. Hey, have you been to Comic-Con?
No, tell me about that.
I asked James about it earlier. He says he went last year.
Who said they were at Comic-Con the other day and that they met somebody there and like, was it MASH? Yeah, MASH went there. He dressed up and everything. You went.
I went, and I was talking there about AI.
Did you dress up?
No, I was going to.
Oh, come on, Jack.
What?
We were going to get all excited about your outfit that you were
going to
wear.
What am I going to look like?
I don't know. I've never been to Comic-Con. I don't know what I would wear.
No, man.
Yeah,
well,
no.
Well, I suppose, yeah, if I was going to give it some thought, it'll be some obscure character. Then people would be forced to ask me, who are you?
Well, before you move on to talking about Comic-Con, what role would you really have liked? Out of all the movies you've ever seen, which role would you like to have played the most? You go over the lines in your head, you can't help yourself, you're into it.
Yeah, yeah. I think it would be one of those military or cop stories, because the language has become intuitive to me now. And I know the characters so well. And I've done a few cop roles in my time while I was still a serving policeman and after I left the police. And whenever I go back into that world, it just feels like putting on an old coat that still fits just perfect. And the language comes back, and the attitude and the shiftiness and the hyper-awareness and all of that becomes just part of me again.
Yeah, we need Judge Dredds in life more, says Sila. Maybe.
You have been judged.
99% of us play the good guy in our daily lives. It must be awesome to just let loose and not care about what happens. That's maybe why people like doing the villain role.
Yeah. And of course, I learned from the best. Remember Robert Whitehead, who played Barker Haynes on Sidingo?
Shame, when did he die? Like recently?
Dog, he's still alive.
Oh, see?
Yeah.
See how little I know about what's going on at the moment. I didn't mean to dead name him. Of course I remember Barker Haynes, the character. Why did I think he was... Who died recently?
No, there have been a few deaths, sadly. There have been...
You rattled them off the other day. Ah, Michelle Puertas. She was special. Huh?
Yeah, man. You know, and
we should do, James? We should have a game next week where we play Dead or Alive. We get a whole bunch of celebrities that we haven't heard from in a long time, and then we guess in the studio which ones are alive and which ones are dead.
Or have them in studio and ask them, are you dead or alive?
Yeah, are you dead? Yeah. Okay. I apologize, Robert Whitehead. I had no idea. So he's still going strong.
An absolute darling. Yeah, of course, he doesn't work a lot, and that for me is one of the things that keeps driving my activism. I hate the fact that he's worked for 50 years, and he should be earning a residual income.
Yeah.
And he isn't. Oh. And that's wrong.
A great actor.
Super, super actor. Yeah.
All right. So you brought up Comic-Con. Why did you bring that up?
I just thought you might look good in a Betty Boop kind of
thing. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that would be me. No, I don't go. And I'm the opposite of an activist, hey? I'll speak my mind on the show. Thank God I got my own show. Because if I always get asked to go on other people's shows, and I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
I come in here. We do this 3 times a week. That's good enough. You want to hear what I think? There's going to be somewhere in the last 10 years, tens of thousands of hours that you'll find out what I think about pretty much everything.
Yeah.
But I'm not an activist. I would never go on a protest.
Okay.
I would never describe myself as an activist, write an article about something. Oh, I'm thinking of Jamie Barker. That's right. No, Barker Haynes was...
Yeah.
Yeah, Barker Haynes is Robert Whitehead. Yes. Thanks, James. We really needed that.
Yeah, but that's another one, another
great,
loss.
Great stuff, yeah. Well, James wouldn't be a great loss.
Is he going to come back out here and tell us another
another useful fact?
Yeah.
He's gonna update us. He's got a clock in his office with dying actors.
Yeah. So here's another one, guys.
Yeah. Who else is dead, James? In fact, we want 4 more names before the end of the show, all right? I know.
Fair enough.
Know. Flex, if you want to add any dead actors, feel free. We could always do with more, you know? In fact, the more dead actors, the more money for the living ones.
I'm not sure that's a formula.
No, definitely not the formula. I'm not an activist.
Mm.
So this is what you're going to I mean, this is going to be a legacy project for you. You're going to have to hand it over to someone else at some point, and it's an ongoing battle. It's not like it's going to be won.
What really worries me, though, is that just recently we were sitting with some very senior officials from the Department of Employment and Labor, which is actually where the conversation sits, not with Kate and McKenzie.
Not at Arts and Culture.
Not at all.
Right.
Because this is a question about the actor's status as
who's the minister
freelancer.
There at the moment? I don't know, because they change them all the time. Oh, Nkosazana Meth.
Yeah.
Meth, that's not a great surname for a minister.
Well,
I'm going to say it. You don't have to say anything. You're busy negotiating with them. Meth is not a great surname.
Meth is a great surname. It depends what you want to add to it.
Well, methylated spirits is not a great place to go.
That's
and
just
methamphetamines
so rude.
Is not a great place to go. So I don't know what other kind of meth we were maybe thinking of. Methane, also not great. So I'm just going to say, a complicated surname. Anyway, how's that negotiation going with the Department of Labor?
It's worryingly not going anywhere because we were sitting with the senior officials and we couldn't get those officials to understand the difference between a freelancer and an employee. And a good example of that is when they suggested to us, but why don't you guys just go on strike then?
Yeah.
And we said, but we can't.
You can't go on strike.
Yeah, this is exactly what the Labor Relations Act gives us. Oh, the man. LRA allows you the protection under labor law to create a union and to engage in all those other wonderful things like industrial action and collective bargaining.
Yeah, listen, like I said earlier, I'm not an activist and I certainly would never join a protest. I never even got close to it when there were those legit protests against, you know, Jacob Zuma, and things were looking particularly dire at some point. I still thought, there's no way you're going to find me on the street with a sign.
Yeah.
But you have to get out there. So how are you guys going to, and I'm not just talking about acting now, but all the other stuff that you care about so much, what gets you across the line that you actually decide, I'm going to go and stand in a crowd and make a noise?
Well, what really attracts me to activism is the prospect that I might actually be the only one standing there.
Really?
Yeah.
That could be exciting. We're the only one with a sign, like
yes.
in those the meme with the guy holding up the sign, you know?
That's going to be me on Wednesday, by the way.
What are you doing on Wednesday?
I'm going to be at the Constitutional Court because
that's
Cyril,
quite a big deal.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I love the fact that we can do this in South Africa.
All right.
Cyril refused to sign the Copyright Amendment Bill, which gives us a reform of copyright protection.
Oh.
And our law from 1978 has simply never been revised.
So what does this law entail and why should we care about it?
Firstly, for actors, it gives us the right to earn royalties. Secondly, it gives certain exceptions to copyright protection for people with disabilities, blind people.
What, if you're blind or you're disabled, they just take away your copyright?
No, it allows you to turn something into Braille without needing to go and pay additional fees.
That makes sense. Yeah. All right.
So Cyril refused to sign that bill into law because you must know the publishing houses all up in the global north make a lot of money by price gouging in South Africa.
You must phone Elton John.
Yes, yes.
Because he'll come.
Yeah, or as I say, Elton.
Yeah, right. Yeah. He'll fly down here.
Yeah.
I mean, he's grouchy and grumpy as hell now. So he'll be ready to take this one on.
Yeah.
Obviously, if anybody has... See, this is something that maybe we should get into just a little bit because we've got some time here. The creative product of a creative mind, that has value.
Yes.
Right. And the performance of that creativity in the actual writing or the painting or the drawing or the sculpting or the acting, that is, it does have inherent value. Yeah. I'm the first one to say, well, actors just pretend. And you know I take the piss. We've had this argument before.
Yeah, yeah.
But in all the creative arts and in all creative processes, we want to attribute the value back to the artist because they've put the effort in.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell when you've got something that's been crafted. There's this huge argument going on at the moment because China produces so much of what the world regards as mass-produced cheap products.
Yeah.
But they also make some of the very beautiful, artistic, dramatic creations that are marketed in other countries as being, you know, fine Italian craftsmanship.
Oh, yeah.
You've seen this video going around at the moment of the dude who explains that when a label says made in Italy, according to EU rules, all that has to be done is the last stage in the development of that article needs to be completed in Italy.
Mm.
So, for example, a Gucci bag, which is actually made in China, almost all of them are.
Yeah.
They put the final zip on or whatever in Italy, and then it's considered this is a genuine as opposed to the Hong Kong version.
Yes.
But actually, they're both made in China.
Yeah.
So how do we get past this to the point where we can actually give credit to the real creators and so that they can make the money for the craftsmanship that they're responsible for?
Yeah. You know, it's a good example because the designer ultimately would be earning what's due to them. The place of manufacture shouldn't really have to matter. In fact, I had this conversation with Yvonne Shaka Shaka.
Oh, yeah?
She released a wonderful new range of kitchenware with authentic African designs. Yep. And it was presented
she's
up
such
on the,
a powerhouse, that woman, eh?
And so gracious.
Yeah, I love her. So she's my other mother.
Yeah.
She kind of semi-adopted me for a little while. So I've grown up with her other four boys in terms of being one of her children. That's what she says anyway. I don't claim it because who am I to claim this? But Machaka said to me years ago that it's not enough for her to just be a singer.
Yeah.
I mean, she's been a businesswoman. She's been involved in all kinds of companies successfully.
Oh, yeah.
And now you tell me she's launched a range of kitchenware?
Yeah, that's right.
I feel like I haven't been paying attention. That's amazing.
Or that you're no longer one of her four sons.
Maybe she's given me up. Maybe I'm an orphan.
But I did tease her, though, because the entire write-up, the presentation, all the designs and all that was saying proudly African, authentic African designs. And with all of that, right at the bottom was a sticker that said, "Made in China."
Oh.
So I took a picture of this and I posted it and I sent it put it out on social media, and I was teasing. Sure. I was being naughty, yeah. And I said, how authentic is it if it has to be made in China? And of course, typical Yvonne, so gracious and taking the joke as well, she said, it is the only way that you're going to make it at a reasonable cost and so that your design
She's
and
right.
your product
And people
has
want
profit.
Cheap stuff. They don't want expensive stuff.
No. You try and make the same thing in Africa and it's just not going to happen in the way that you want it to.
Probably there'll be inconsistencies and all the rest of it. Listen, the Chinese are very good at what they do.
Yeah.
They really are. That's why they're the world's manufacturing hub. And India are hot on their heels, eh?
That's right. Also, going back to the Trump discussion, Trump knows it as well, which is why this reshoring idea and the Trump tariff thing is such
it's nonsense.
Craziness.
But I don't think it was his. Maybe he's been smarter than we think he is, because he's now there's a truce with China over this tariff thing. You've seen that.
Well, he didn't have to go there, did it?
But sometimes what you do is you choose an extreme position so that everything short of that extreme position seems reasonable. I mean, he wrote this book called The Art of the Deal. And
yes.
And I haven't read it. Maybe I should, maybe we all should, because he's not hiding the ball. This is how he's always been. There were episodes of The Apprentice where he did, I watched one or two of them, where he did the most incredible things. And I thought, you know what? This guy does know what he's talking about. We all just dismiss him as this orange fool. I don't. I mean, a lot of people do. They dismiss him as being all kinds of things. The media have labeled him in a number of different ways. Probably a lot of the things are not deserved. Certainly, you know, he has been attacked in more ways than almost any other politician in world history by his own country's media.
Mm.
I don't know that there's been anyone who's had to put up with as much of this as he has.
I don't think anyone has deserved it as much.
Maybe. I'm certainly not saying he's perfect.
Mm.
Nobody is. But the guy seems to have a knack for reading the room in a way that very few other politicians have ever demonstrated. He seems to understand America has had enough of this and they want some of that.
Mm.
And he seems to understand that when you're dealing with China, you first frighten the bejesus out of them by saying we're going to put 125% tariffs on you. They shit themselves. And then you bring them back to a much more reasonable position and they think they've had a good deal. This is an old negotiating tactic.
I think you may be justifying something that was a complete failure.
For and you example, think he's trying to save face?
I think, well, he has to try and save face because it's going to cost his economy. The lie or the absolute ignorance of saying we're going to impose this tariff on China and China's going to pay for it. There's a very simple principle that, you know, the tariff is paid by the company that imports.
Well, the consumer eventually pays.
That's right. So that has to be passed on to the consumer.
He's punishing his own consumers in his own country.
That's correct. Sure. So to come out and say that China's going to pay the tariff.
But they haven't actually, I mean, they've now declared a truce. I saw India decided they're going to do zero. It's going to be 0-0 between America and India now.
That's fair enough.
So maybe, just maybe, like, I don't want to give credit where it isn't due, but in this case it does appear that in some places it really is working. He's getting what the best deal for America is. And in places like Europe where, you know, if you try to sell an American car there, someone explained this very well on the show the other day to me. If you want to sell an American car in Europe, they smack like 10 to 20% tariffs on you.
Mm.
And now he's saying, that's not fair. You're treating us very badly. And now he's getting some kind of equilibrium brought back to the system.
If you were a deal maker and you discovered that there was a way to achieve equilibrium, I don't think the way to go about it is to go to 145% and come back down to 50% because you've advanced nothing. You've gone into a territory that
it seems like
you didn't need to go.
It seems like if you're going to ask me about deal making, I'm going to say Trump has a pretty good record on there.
And if I asked you, would China end up paying the tariff, you would say?
Probably not.
Yes, exactly. No. So why say it?
Probably not, but you also got to remember, like, China is not – they don't have a history of – reacting immediately to things. They play a long game.
Yeah, right.
And maybe he's factored that in. Maybe that's... What the hell's that? James, who's talking to me? Someone just said GPS signal lost. Who? Who's lost? Help them. Find them, James. Sorry, these are the kinds of things that happen on the show because it's live and we wouldn't edit them out. Did you hear that?
I heard it, yeah. That can't be my phone. Mine's
on
silent.
Is it your phone?
No.
Talk to your Siri, let's see.
I don't have a Siri.
Oh, then, well, that was Siri. Was that your Waze, maybe?
No.
Not mine. Mine's right here, and she's not confused or lost.
Okay.
James, was it yours? Oh, it's Flex. It's your phone. Jesus, where were we? Oh, yeah, so China.
Yeah.
I think we're in a fascinating place right now in terms of world trade because things are kind of disheveled and people are unhappy and it's not working properly. And there's a lot of people feeling that they're hard done by.
Mm.
And nations have not demonstrated the best ability to marshal a free market to its maximum capacity.
Which is why G20 is going to be really interesting.
If the US come. Otherwise, it's not going to be interesting.
Well, will the conversation happen without the US?
Yeah, it can. Yeah. But nobody's going to care.
That's why it's interesting to me, because I'm convinced that there are still conversations to be had, particularly when people can see, and they've already said, we no longer trust the US as an ally. We no longer want to
But they're not saying that. I think most leaders are so pragmatic that they deal with whatever comes at them, especially people like Xi Jinping.
Yeah.
That guy he's a pragmatist.
Yeah.
He's not ideologically captured. What he wants is to make China as prosperous as possible. He realizes he's got to keep growth going.
Yeah.
And in order to keep growth going, he needs partners.
Yeah.
He needs trading partners in the world. He needs strategic partners in the world. And that's the whole story of China during his premiership.
Mm.
I don't think he's particularly interested in sitting and going, oh, well, you know, America, let's try and shiv them because it'll help us. If it actually would, perhaps he'd do that. But I think he sees them as the largest trading partner he's got.
That's right.
And I think he can make it work.
And that's a smart way of
and
doing
so
it.
And so Trump is pragmatic. Even if you were right and you said he's trying to save face, which is not an impossibility, let's just for a second abandon any connection to what we know or don't know about Trump. Maybe he made a terrible fuck up there.
Mm.
And he's now looking at this trade tariff thing and say, oh my God, it's going to cost me my midterm election results with the Republicans losing and then I'm a lame duck. If that's why, then he's a pragmatist. Again, yeah. He's not bound to ideology.
Yeah.
And if he's a pragmatist and Xi's a pragmatist and them is a pragmatist. That's what it sounded like.
You're trying to pronoun your way through this.
No, because he is, she is, she is, Z is. Who the fuck knows how many of these pronouns we're going to have to use? But if they're all pragmatists, then cool. They'll figure out a way to make it work because they both need to keep quite contentious situations at home under control.
Yeah.
If Xi Jinping loses control of the Chinese feeling that things are tending towards prosperity, and you've got lots and lots of people who are working very hard in China, way harder than they are in any other part of the world probably. If they aren't getting bang for their buck and their economy starts to slide backwards, you're going to have a billion people who are going to be fomenting something close to revolution in a very short time.
Yeah.
He knows that. It's an unstable situation to try and keep stable. And I think Trump knows that, you know, he didn't win by such a landslide that it's going to be easy pickings for him for the rest of his term.
No, and there are like district town halls and things that are being held now where people are feeling that they are being silenced. You've seen the arrests and things like that coming out of some of these town halls with local politicians. People are being dragged out.
Don't know anything about it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely out there on social media. What was interesting to me was a discussion that was going on with South Africa's place in BRICS, where the discussion was...
Do you think BRICS is even a thing?
I think it is a thing, yeah. And especially now, because people are looking at how do we create an alternative system, and there is this move towards a separate financing system apart from SWIFT that they want to now create, and it's going to be blockchain-based. And that's in development, and I think it's been announced by BRICS, and that was a big thing. What was disturbing to me was a discussion that South Africa, instead of creating economic deals, economic ties and trade deals with its BRICS partners, instead was looking for political clout more than trade relations. That for me was disturbing.
Yeah, but obviously because we've got a government here who has... Our government in this country has squandered all the moral capital and the political reputational stuff that they might have had, you know, when Mandela and even Mbeki were around. We had a lot of clout.
Yeah.
We don't have that anymore. We're not a serious contender. In the BRICS group, they sometimes just leave the S off because we're not a major player. The rest of them don't need us. Brazil's economy is monstrous compared to ours.
Could
have been a contender. China and India, they really don't need us.
Not at all.
I mean,
not at all.
We may have certain strategic value. Even to the US, we might have some strategic value. You know, we occupy this unique geographical position in the world. Yeah. But we're tiny. I saw a chart yesterday of GDP in the world. Africa makes up, I think, 2%. All of Africa makes up 2% of the world's gross global product. 2%. And of that, South Africa isn't even the biggest one anymore.
Yeah.
We've been eclipsed by Nigeria and Egypt.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's embarrassing. We used to be the big heavyweight contender in this continent, right? And we were the country that, if you wanted to launch a product into Africa, which is a massive market, we got a huge market of consumers in Africa that are untapped, unsaturated. It's massive. This is, to anyone, represents a major economic opportunity. And I think anyone who isn't paying attention to the fact that Africa has also got the youngest population and we're a growing population is not really focused on the future. They probably won't be able to sell any more in the places they're already selling. This is the place to come to. But we've lost the imprimatur of being at the leading edge of that here in South Africa. And that's a pity to me.
Absolutely.
So when we go around with our begging bowl, which I don't know whether that's part of the reason they're all in America this week, all these ministers and Cyril.
Yeah, probably.
Probably also going to go around with a begging bowl.
Mm.
But, you know, Russia and China and India, they don't need us. We need them.
Yeah. And as a developing economy, you don't just turn it around in 10 or 15 years.
Hell no. But we could have started 10 years ago and look where we'd be.
Yes, that is the point.
Instead of having stupid rules, and you talk about the Department of Labor, I certainly don't want to jeopardize anything that you're doing with them at the moment. But our labor laws in this country are a disaster.
Mm.
They are certainly not for actors in this case, but employment laws in this country are onerous. There is so much red tape.
Yeah.
Starting a business is impossible. That's not so much just the Department of Labor. It's the Department of
Trade
of
Industry
Finance,
and Competition.
Trade and Industry. They make it very, very difficult. You have to keep filling in forms. You have to go through endless amounts of red tape.
Yeah.
You have to wait for years and years to get things like, you talk about copyrights and patents and, you know, registrations of companies.
Yeah.
Trademarks are impossible to get registered within a year, 2 years sometimes.
Sure.
So they've got to sort out all of that shit so that we can do business. And if they had started doing that 10 years ago, we'd now be in a position where we could truly capitalize on that.
Just
and we might even be able to go up to a Russia or a China or an India and say, hey, we could be a useful partner to you.
Yeah, yeah. One of the advantages, and it's a common feature amongst most film-producing nations, is that you have a film incentive rebate. So that whether you're a local producer or an international producer, you come to the country and you say, I've got 60% of people working on this show are local hire.
Sounds like quotas to me.
No, but it's a useful thing. So
if I were making a movie, I wouldn't give a shit about any of that. Do you ever put yourself in the producer's pants?
Yes.
Shoes?
Yeah. And that's why producers because the rebate gives you up to 40%
of the benefit.
That's the benefit.
Yeah. No, sure. You make it economically attractive to them.
That's the point.
Didn't we do something like that in Cape Town for a while where it was very cheap to make movies here?
Yeah. And that's because of the incentive rebate.
And the rand-dollar exchange.
Absolutely.
Sure. So it made perfect sense. Now that to me as a producer would be exactly what I would want to be making.
And because of poor administration and incompetence, we have just lost our film incentive rebate. Because the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, as they said, oversubscribed the number of requests or applications that they got. They can no longer sustain it. So the entire thing has been canned until they know what to do with it, which means more money from Treasury and all of that.
I'm going to go back to what you very wisely said earlier, and we're going to end on this note because it's already 8 o'clock, believe it
what?
Or not. I know. Feels
I was
like
getting
5
warmed
minutes.
Up, Gareth. Come on.
Where did you say you're going on Thursday? You're going to be up early again?
I'm going to be – oh, yeah. There's a TV show that I need to be on on Thursday. But Wednesday, Concord.
Ah, yeah. You're going to be protesting solo.
I think so, yes.
Well, you know what? You go with our blessing.
Thank you.
Strength to you because you deserve it. This fight that you're on, this war path that you're beating, I have tremendous respect for
you.
I think you're the only brave voice who stands up for these actors. But I do want to finish with this quickly. Carl DeSantos says, and it relates to something you said earlier, the economic problems we face are not complicated. He says he could get us to 5% growth within 18 months. And I think those are not unattainable goals.
Yeah.
But we need better, more sophisticated thinkers, to go to your point from earlier.
Yeah.
We don't have smart people in charge. If you have smart people in charge, these things can be achieved very quickly.
I agree.
But politics is like a popularity contest.
Mm, mm.
And sometimes the dumb rugby jock wins. Mm. And sometimes the prettiest girl in the class wins. And sometimes someone wins just by promising you free stuff. And that's why we end up with shit in the trough.
Populism in democracy.
Yeah.
That's what
it is. It's an ongoing and very complicated thing. But I'm thrilled to have a conversation with you about all of this stuff.
I love that. Yeah, thank you. And thanks for having me again. After so many years.
You say it's years. I think I'm telling you it's like a couple of months, Jack. All right. Thanks, everybody. That's all we got time for this morning. I hope you had a good start to your day and your week, and we will catch up on Wednesday. Ciao.